Welcome to another episode of Preferred Walk-On, PFF's College Football Show. I'm your host, Max Chadwick, alongside my co-host, Dalton Wasserman. We got our Week 6 preview now, Dalton, and I'm just telling you guys right now, we're getting spoiled as college football fans. This is the third week in a row where there are at least four games between ranked teams. And if you look at my top 25, there are six games between ranked teams. So we're going to bring you our preview and prediction for the five biggest games of week six. And Dalton, it is an awesome week six, man.
It is. We're getting to the point in the year where every single game matters and every single game's going to be tight. Every big game, you saw it starting this past weekend with several teams in the top 10 taking it down to the wire. And I think you're going to continue to see it as these teams start to play their rivals, play each other in conference, and the margins for error is going to be really small.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a little preview for next week as well. Next week's preview show is loaded as well. We got two games between top 10 teams and USC against Notre Dame, Oregon against Washington, a bunch of other great games as well. So next week's preview, I mean, dude, we're in the thick of it now, man, and I am having the time of my life, man. But let's start off with the biggest game of week six, the one that everyone's talking about between two top 10 teams in my ranking, at least. Number three, Texas, though, going up against number 12, Oklahoma, which is at noon on ABC. And Dalton, really, this game will determine who the team to beat in the Big 12 is, and really who one of the top contenders for the college football playoff is as well.
Absolutely. The winner of this game has every opportunity to run the table and make the playoff. This is the biggest game in the Big 12 this year. It's probably one of the five or six biggest games in the country. Oklahoma's been rolling, albeit through some softer competition. Texas has two massive wins at Alabama and at home versus Kansas. You got two teams that are high-powered when they're playing consistently. Oklahoma's getting better on defense. Brent Venables is starting to build that team to his identity. And Texas' defense has been spectacular. Honestly, it's quietly the best part of their team, despite Quinn Ewers and all the weapons getting it together. This is going to be as fun a game as you see all year. You got two teams that obviously don't like each other, two teams that are really, really good and with possible national championship implications on the line.
Oh, massive, man. And usually it doesn't even matter like how good or bad these teams are. The Red River rivalry is always one of the biggest games because it's one of the best rivalries in college football. This year's version, like you mentioned, though, dude, has really a ton more importance because you mentioned both of these teams. These are the only two teams in the Big 12 right now that are currently in the top 25. So the winner of this game is the clear front runner to win the Big 12 conference and make the college football playoff. And honestly, Dalton, I mean, Oklahoma, if they win this game, they're going to launch inside the top 10. I already have them in the top 10, but they can go up as high as 6 or 7 probably with a win. Texas, if they win this game, I think you have to have them as the number one team in the country because, like you mentioned, they already beat a number three at the time, Alabama, in Tuscaloosa. They beat number 24, Kansas, of course, without Jalen Daniels, but still, they beat him pretty convincingly in that game as well. If they beat Oklahoma, this will be their third top 25 victory. No other school in the country has that many top 25 victories, and there hasn't been a clear number one team yet. And Texas, if they beat Oklahoma, they're going to have the best resume by far in college football. So if they win this game, man, I would have them at number one. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to. You get three signature wins in your first six games. You have to. Eventually, the resume speaks for itself, and you have to look at 2023 alone instead of reputation and prior years and everything like that. You know, we've got some great teams at the top, right? You've got Michigan, but they don't have a single signature win yet. You have Ohio State, who has one, and they've been kind of shaky at times otherwise. Texas resume would just trump all of that. You just, especially wins in this game with Oklahoma being this good this year, right? Last year was the first year of Venables and all that, and they were building. The win at Tuscaloosa still stands out above just about anything else. And an impressive win at that, a double-digit win at that. They were clearly the better team. If Texas were to do something similar to that to Oklahoma, or even just win the game, honestly, three signature wins in your first six is just outstanding. There's almost no way you couldn't make them number one.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I mentioned, Georgia struggled at times this year too, with South Carolina and Auburn. Georgia got a big game that we will get to in just a little bit, but it'll be tough to deny Texas that number one next to their name if they win this game, man. But what ultimately is the matchup that you're looking for most in this game?
Oklahoma has to be better in their front seven and their run defense. Last year, they got run all over by Bijan Robinson, Roschon Johnson. Jonathan Brooks got in on it. Look, Dylan Gabriel didn't play in the game last year, so it was a little unfair.
Yeah.
But Texas ran all over them, and the play action was just rolling. 14 for 20 for 217 yards and two touchdowns off of play action last year. Quinn Ewers' life was way too easy, and it starts with Oklahoma's run defense. Now, their run D grade in total looks good, but over the last 2 weeks against Cincinnati and Iowa State, just a 68.4, 79th in the country over the last 2 weeks. They still have some issues defending the run, and now Jonathan Brooks is coming off a game where at 218 yards on 21 carries, obviously over 10 yards a carry against Kansas, he was the best player on the field. If Oklahoma can't somewhat stop the run, they have major issues with teams that run off tackle. They get outside zone, they run off tackle on them, and the play action game off of it, they could have major issues. Because last year, they allowed Texas really to run the foundation of their offense. Run zone, run off tackle, get to action, make things easier for Ewers instead of asking him to drop back and sling the ball 40 to 45 times. If Texas has balance, they're incredibly dangerous, and Oklahoma has a lot of deep problems with off-tackle runs and crossers coming behind their linebackers off of it. They need their front seven to step up in this game to be able to stay in it. Because last year, 49-0, even without Gabriel, is a lot to step up from last year for the rest of the team. Was it the worst deficit in the history of the rivalry? I believe it was, yeah. Yeah, so you're coming. That's still a big gap to fill. And the way sometimes Venables runs his defense isn't conducive to teams, you know, running right at him and stopping them. That's going to be priority number one, more than Ewers and Mitchell and Worthy and Whittington, all that. They need to stop Jonathan Brooks at the line of scrimmage, or they're going to have a lot of issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they stop Jonathan Brooks, because like you mentioned before, they're actually right now Oklahoma leads the country in run defense grade, but like you mentioned, it hasn't been great in the last couple of weeks, and they've played a pretty easy schedule before this, so they kind of built that run defense grade in the easy games. But against a guy like Jonathan Brooks, man, you're gonna have to bring it. So if Oklahoma does a good job stopping Jonathan Brooks, though, then all of a sudden, my biggest matchup is what Quinn Ewers is going to show up on Saturday, man. Because this guy has been a roller coaster the last couple years as Texas' starting quarterback. In his two games against Alabama, which over the last 2 years has the third highest graded defense in the Power 5, in those two games against the Crimson Tide, he has a 90.6 passing grade. In all other games over the last two seasons, he has a 68.5 passing grade. That is a 22-point difference between going against Alabama when you should be struggling, when Alabama makes basically any other quarterback in the country look mortal or less than mortal against them. Quinn Ewers looks fantastic. In the easy games against Big 12 defenses, he struggles. So this is going to be a big matchup for him. And Oklahoma, last year, Ewers played really well. Had an 80.5 grade, was one of his best games of the season, probably, that Oklahoma game. Oklahoma's got a much stronger defense this year. Right now, they're second in the country in overall defensive grade, 10th in EPA per play. You see right there, first in run defense grade as well. So if that run defense steps up, like you say it has to, then all of a sudden it gets to be on Quinn Ewers' shoulders. That could be a big, big game for him. And if big game Quinn shows up like he did against Alabama this year and Alabama for a quarter last year, Texas will win this game. But if he doesn't, man, Oklahoma might be able to pull this one out in a close one. But ultimately, Dalton, who do you have winning in the Red River rivalry?
I'm going to take Texas. I think it's going to be a closer game. I think it's still going to be a high-scoring game. I'll take Texas 38-31. And I have similar issues with Dylan Gabriel as you do with Ewers. Since the start of last season against Power 5 opponents, he only has two games with a 76 passing grade or higher. It seems, look, Oklahoma doesn't do a lot on offense. They run a really simple offense with a lot of base concepts, and they just do it really fast. They want to play with tempo and just run as many plays as possible, right? But they don't do anything complicated. And Gabriel doesn't always elevate the rest of his team like an elite quarterback, right? You know, over the last 2 weeks, him also, he's got a 64.2 passing grade. So you get into the Big 12. They played Cincinnati and Iowa State, who are not near the best teams in the Big 12. and he's got a very mediocre passing grade. He runs the offense well, but he doesn't elevate it beyond that. And schematically, it really doesn't elevate itself beyond that. And I have a hard time believing the way Texas's defense is playing and forcing turnovers that if Gabriel doesn't have probably one of the best games of his career, Oklahoma's going to have to execute at a high, high level everywhere else to work around that. I actually have a little more faith in, if I need one of them to step up, I have a little more faith in Ewers to step up instead of Gabriel. We've seen, you know, Gabriel can tear up the group of five. He did it at UCF. He's done it at Oklahoma. We've seen him in the easier games. But the last 2 weeks, even in a game against Iowa State last week where they scored 50 points, it wasn't as great a performance from Gabriel as you might think. Still two turnover-worthy plays in there, a passing grade in the 60s. I'm just not sure he can elevate them in a game like this against a defense like this. And I'm still a little worried that it's not the best matchup for Oklahoma's front seven against Texas's running game. I'm going to take the Longhorns.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Longhorns too in a close one. I have them 31-28. I think this honestly could be one of the best games of the year. But I think Texas will survive. I think it's going to be a lot better than it was last year, obviously with Gabriel playing. But I do think Texas will still come out on top in this game, man. And listen, like we said before, Texas win this game, they are the number one team in the country. I think both you and I are going to have them at number one if they win this game after the week, no matter what happens in the other games. Because like we said, that's three wins over top 25 teams. I mean, three of them. So nobody else has that many. So Texas absolutely deserves to be number one if they win this game. But I think it's going to be a really close game. I honestly, that's one of the hardest ones for me to pick. But I really like Oklahoma this year. I like what they're doing defensively. But I do think Texas, with their defense, like you mentioned, against Dylan Gabriel, and I think Ewers will do just enough and Jonathan Brooks will do just enough. I think Texas will come out on top in this game. But moving over to the other noon game that we're talking about is two Tigers, number 23 LSU, at number 21, Missouri. And really, Dalton, the storyline for me is this is a tale of two Tigers, man. Because you got one team in LSU who was the number five team in the country opening to enter the season. They had legitimate college football playoff aspirations. Now they have two losses before October even started. So now all of a sudden those playoff dreams are basically all but gone because there's never been a two-loss team in the playoffs history that made the four-team college football playoff. And on the other side, Missouri, who a lot of people really didn't have that high expectations for, they're currently have their highest ranking in 8 years, thanks to its first 5-0 start since 2013. And Eli Drinkwitz was a little bit on the hot seat, I think, before the season started. Now, all of a sudden, they might talk about an extension for him, man. They're really performing at a very, very high level right now. So Missouri is number 21. I had them at number 17, so I think they should be even higher than where they are right now. But it's a dream start for Missouri, and it's a kind of a nightmare start for LSU so far, man.
It is, and I'm going to tell you the best thing Eli Drinkwitz did was, so in the few weeks I've been on this show with you, there's two guys that stand out, two offensive coordinators that stand out. They're both in their first year with their teams. One is Ben Arbuckle at Washington State.
Yep.
The other is Kirby Moore at Missouri. Came from Fresno State, always a good program over there. They're even ranked right now after he left. He's unlocked everything about this offense. Brady Cook is coming off the best game of his career. Luther Burden is the best. He's the highest graded receiver, at least in the country. He might be currently the best receiver in the country the way he's playing. Check this out. He's first in receiving grade. He's third in yards per route run. He's second in missed tackles forced. He's in the top 20 in deep grade. He's third in intermediate grade. He's the best receiver in the country on screens. This guy can beat you at all levels. And they have found a way to get their best player, because Burden didn't play like this last year. Moore came in here and found out this guy was their best athlete, and he's getting him the ball like crazy. And Cook, the way he's being coached, I'm going to tell you, this offense, schematically, it's fantastic too. There's a lot of passing concepts in this offense that are similar, kind of like Sean McVay's offense, to be honest with you, a little bit from the Rams. There's the concepts at times seem simple, but they come from so many different angles and they take deep shots. They have a good feel. Cook has a great feel right now for either throwing the ball into windows in zone coverage or identifying one-on-one matchups and taking his shots. He's been coached incredibly well right now. Kirby Moore, actually, just as much as the players, is at the forefront of this turnaround. It's incredible. He's going to find himself a head coaching job very soon, because you look at this offense, and they still last week, despite it being Cook's best game, and Burden and Marquise Johnson has two 40-plus yard touchdowns in the last 2 weeks. Oklahoma transfer Theo Weiss. That's going to be the scary part. If they start adding more on top of a running game that still put up almost 140 yards last week, Burden might be the best receiver in the country right now. Mm-hmm. If they get Weiss and Johnson involved the way they were involved last week, this gets dangerous, because Cook's a whole different guy now. Before this year in his career, 19 big-time throws, 20 turnover-worthy plays. This year, those respective marks are 11 and 2. Two turnover-worthy plays for Brady Cook in five games. It's a whole different animal all of a sudden. They have weapons. They have balance. They have a quarterback who's throwing the ball with conviction. They have guys who can make plays after the catch. They have guys who can make plays vertically. And they have a play caller who is molding it all together. I'm telling you, if you throw it on and you didn't know it was Missouri, you'd be like, wow, this team is wicked efficient. They are finding every hole in every defense they're playing. And to be honest with you, that passing offense against LSU's coverage unit right now, it should scare Brian Kelly to death, because LSU right now is the worst coverage unit in the SEC by a mile. Mm-hmm. They are, 118th in the country, the fourth worst in the Power Five. And if you just isolate their secondary, you want to know something weird? We were talking about Harold Perkins needs to rush the passer more, right? And figuring if he rushes the passer more, maybe it'll help get guys under pressure. You know, Harold Perkins is their highest graded coverage player, like by a lot. They don't have a single defensive back with a coverage grade over 65. This secondary is struggling so bad right now. And you saw, obviously, they gave up 55 to Ole Miss last week. This secondary is struggling so bad, it might threaten Brian Kelly's job security, because they can't cover anything. And to go against another team with a high-flying offense in Missouri, Perkins last week finally rushed the passer 30-plus times. I think it was 31 times. Mm-hmm. And they had their worst game in coverage. They don't have any answers right now on defense. Their team right now, I remember you talking about Alabama last year, that they were basically Bryce Young putting out fires. That's LSU now.
Yep.
Daniels, Neighbors, Thomas, putting out fires. That's it. Trying to keep up with everything that their defense is giving away. They gave up, 34 to Arkansas? They gave up 45 to Florida State? They gave up 55 to Ole Miss? They're not winning one-on-one. There's too many busts in coverage. This guy's running wide open. And if Harold Perkins, we did not come into the year thinking Harold Perkins would lead them in coverage grade by a lot.
Yeah.
That's not okay. And yeah, the fact that they need him to rush the passer, when he rushes the passer, they're pretty darn close to the worst secondary in the country. And against these weapons and what I see schematically from Missouri, it's going to be a major problem for LSU. I really think so.
Dude, absolutely. You literally took the matchup away from me. That's exactly the matchup that you have to watch in this game, man. Brady Cook, you mentioned it, man. I mean, I keep going back to our Kansas State preview when we're saying Brady Cook is kind of a turnover-worthy play machine. Like, is he going to be able to lead this team to victory? He has been fan-freaking-tastic. He's made us look dumb, honestly, so far this season, because we really didn't have much belief in him. And honestly, a lot of people – I have actually a lot of friends who root for Missouri, guys who host Missouri podcasts. They didn't have much belief in him either. I was on their podcast in the preseason, and they were talking to me about a quarterback battle. They were saying, hey, you know, is there any other quarterbacks that can step up, because Brady Cook might not be the guy? He's been the guy, man. Last year, he was 94th in the country in passing grade with a 66.7. This year, he's 17th with an 88.7 passing grade. It's 22 points higher, Brady Cook, from last year to this year. I think you made a great point. Kirby Moore has been fantastic. And the other point that you made too, Luther Burden III, man, he is your Biletnikoff winner right now. You see right there, he leads all receivers in the country in overall grade, leads them all in receiving yards. He leads all Power 5 receivers in yards after the catch. I compared this guy to Deebo Samuel multiple times now. He is a special player with the ball in his hands. And the good news for Missouri fans, he's only a true sophomore. This kid has to come back to school next year where he should be the number one receiver in college football heading into next year if he's not already this year. And he should be the number one receiver in the 2025 NFL draft as well. This kid is special. And like you mentioned, LSU, fourth worst coverage grade in the Power 5, second worst in terms of EPA per pass. They got to get pressure. LSU does a pretty good job in pass rushing, especially when number four, Harold Perkins, is allowed to rush the passer. 12th best pass rushing grade in the Power 5. But also, Missouri is tied for 10th in pass blocking grade. The offensive line has really held up really well. Javon Foster, the left tackle there, has been one of the best tackles in college football so far this season. So it's not like, you know, the Ole Miss game last week where Ole Miss had kind of an average offensive line because, okay, that's where LSU's defense can step up. Missouri kind of has an answer for them in a lot of ways, man. And I am scared. I'm scared for that LSU secondary. And because, like you said, they are really, really struggling this year. So with all that said, Dalton, are you picking the upset? Are you picking the Missouri Tigers to take down LSU?
I'm going to do it. I think, to be honest with you, I think this is even more than the Red River. I think this is actually the most fun game.
Yeah.
Well, we'll look back at this game and go, wow, that was fun. This game's going to be a roller coaster. Okay. LSU is going to put up points. Missouri's defense is better than theirs, but it's not elite. Daniels is the best deep passer in the country right now. Neighbors is the best deep receiver in the country right now. And Brian Thomas is somewhere in the top 10. There's going to be big plays back and forth like crazy in this game. It's going to get nuts. Okay. Unless Missouri's defense is just, they don't need to be like great in this game. It's hard to be great against Jaden Daniels, but they're better than LSU on defense too. And both teams have a reasonable amount of balance. Both teams run the ball between the tackles really, really well. Okay. But I think with the way Missouri's offense is rolling and they're at home, and the biggest thing for me last week, especially is the last 2 weeks, they've shown that Burden is not the only weapon.
Yeah.
Right. If they have Burden and Weiss and Johnson going the way they've been going the last 2 weeks, they're going to be a huge, huge problem. And especially for the team that, look, this is the last week for me, for LSU to try to prove, like, okay, can you guys cover? Is the secondary going to continue to give up 40 points a game? Because if they don't, I don't know how Missouri doesn't score 38 to 40-something points on. I think Jaden Daniels, if they win this game, is going to have to be perfect. He was spectacular. He's been spectacular all year. I mean, honestly, second half against Florida State, notwithstanding, he darn near led him back against Ole Miss with under a minute to go, and two false starts just killed him. I got nothing against Daniels and their receivers, but that feels like the only way they win this game. And if Missouri has balance and Cook keeps playing, this is a different guy.
Yeah,
this is a different guy, the way he's being coached. You can see it on tape. There's no jitters. There's no nothing. He is throwing every ball with the utmost conviction. I mean, ripping it into zone windows, taking chances, giving. Sometimes you just give your best athletes a chance, fade balls and one-on-one matchups and tight coverage. He's throwing every type of ball and every type of coverage. It's a different guy. So I think it's going to be a shootout. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to take Missouri 45 to 41 in a high, whatever the over is, take it.
I love it, man. And yeah, that's a great point you made, man. Because you look at last week, Ole Miss, Trey Harris had 150 yards. Jordan Watkins had 100 yards. Like, it wasn't like LSU's defense can focus in on one receiver. And that's ultimately was their undoing, and why Ole Miss put up 55 points on LSU was because they had a multitude of receivers that you know, Jackson Dart could throw to. That's the same thing with Missouri as well. So, yeah, it's not just Burden, man. Like you said, Weiss is doing really well. Johnson's playing really well. It is kind of a fun matchup that we're seeing because there's a really good chance two of the three finalists for the Biletnikoff Award are playing in this game, and Luther Burden III and Malik Nabers. And Brian Thomas has honestly played fantastic so far this season as well. So it's a really, if you love wide receiver play, tune into this game, man, because it is going to be an awesome receiver game. Dude, I agree with you. We're both picking the upset here. And I think LSU is favored by 6.5, I believe, against Missouri. Favored by 6 right now. I'm taking Missouri 34-31 over LSU. I think this is an upset. I think Missouri at home is a big part of it, and I think Missouri continues its dream season, and LSU continues to fall deeper into their nightmare with a 3-3 start to the season when all of their fans were saying we're making the college football playoff this year. Now you go 3-3 to start the season. It's a nightmarish start, man, but I think it's going to continue. I think Missouri is going to keep going up those rankings, man. They deserve to be higher than 21, in my opinion, and they're going to keep going higher than that, man. So I think Missouri is going to win this game 34-31. So it should be a great game. Another great SEC game that we got is number 11, Alabama at Texas A&M, 3:30 p.m. on CBS. And Dalton, the biggest story is these two coaches, man, the rivalry on and off the field between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. They used to be colleagues. Jimbo Fisher used to be Nick Saban's offensive coordinator when Nick Saban was the LSU head coach. He was there with him for 5 years before Nick went on to the Miami Dolphins. That once friendly relationship kind of turned sour last summer. Saban, of course, accused Texas A&M of quote-unquote buying all of its players after having literally the best recruiting class in history. Texas A&M had eight five-stars in that class. Fisher called Saban a narcissist who should have been slapped. Listen, it's since quieted down. It's since Saban has since apologized. Fisher said he's moved on. So this was a big storyline last year, but it still is kind of a juicy storyline off the field, man, when these two coaches meet.
Well, anytime you're trying to involve someone getting slapped, yeah, that's something. But no, really, I mean, they can't even dodge each other in the offseason anymore. No. I mean, with the way there's no rules on the recruiting grounds anymore and the portal and NIL and all this stuff, you're going to see coaches fighting for this even more than they used to. It used to just be about prestige and getting kids in their hometown and all that. Now it's about who's paying all the money and who's doing the portal. And, you know, you see everybody ripping Dion for building this team through the portal. I mean, look, a team is a team, whatever. Yeah, whatever you put on seriously. The field is what you have. But no, it's always fun to see Saban go against his assistants. And like, you know, you've mentioned before, he's had a little more trouble with them lately.
Yeah.
But it's a big game too. I mean, look, yeah. A&M's 4-1 coming off a big win with their backup quarterback against Auburn. Are they 2-0 in the SEC? I believe it is.
I believe so. Yeah.
They beat Arkansas last week. That's right. And Bama, after the Texas loss, put Milroe back in there, gotten it rolling.
Yep.
Bama's found a formula. Okay. Mm-hmm. This game to me is a fun like tape watch game because you've got two teams that kind of counterpunch each other well. This is going to be a fun one because you've got so last week against Arkansas, A&M blitzed KJ Jefferson on 2/3 of his dropbacks. All right, like 67%. It was like right at 2/3. Huge problems. It was a difference in the game, honestly, was when they blitzed KJ Jefferson, he had no answer. Now, we've been over Alabama's struggles blocking the blitz and Milroe getting the ball out against it. Now, the overall is better the last 2 weeks against it because really what he's doing now when he gets blitzed, he's taking off running.
Yeah,
which is fine. I mean, he's the best athlete on the field. That's cool. But I expect A&M to stay on the gas the same way they did against Arkansas. I would expect them to come out the same way and give Alabama's front every possible look they can to disturb Milroe. Okay. On the other side, you got something really interesting happening because you had Connor Wegman was playing well, albeit against the softer competition, and he gets hurt. He gets hurt against Auburn. But both of their quarterbacks, him and Max Johnson for the season, are grading above a 92. A&M is the second best. They have the second best passing grade in the country behind Miami right now. And you're talking about a team with Johnson who hasn't missed a beat. And to be honest with you, to me, Wegman's biggest asset is his mobility. But they didn't really use it a ton. They let him scramble, but they didn't use it a lot. Max Johnson, looking at it, might fit what Jimbo wants to do better in his offense. He wants to stand back there like Jameis Winston used to and throw the ball well downfield, right? Texas A&M right now is the second best team in the Power 5 behind Colorado on 10-plus yard throws, okay? Max Johnson's the last 2 weeks, I mean, he's zinging them down the field. He's got an absolute cannon, just like his dad, Brad Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute cannon. He doesn't move a ton. He can pick you up 5 or 6 yards if he really, really needs to, but he's going to stand back there and sling it down the field. Now, counterpunch, Alabama is, first of all, they're the best coverage team in the country. And why? Because they're the best coverage team in the country against 10-plus yard throws. They don't allow you to get downfield. Ole Miss did not complete a deep ball on them. Will Rogers last week couldn't get anywhere on them. They don't give up big, big plays. The Texas game was the only game where they gave up a couple, and we already know how Quinn Ewers is against Alabama. So they have figured out that their Alabama secondary is the ultimate test for, I believe, Wegman's going to be outright. It's going to be Max Johnson again.
Yeah, Wegman's done for the season, yeah.
Oh, he's done for the year. Wow. Yeah. Well, which is unfortunate, but to be honest with you, when you watch him the last 2 weeks with Johnson, he might fit their offense better. Jimbo still has a little bit of, like, the Florida State offense. He really hasn't updated it that much. It's drop back. It's making full field reads. It expects a lot of the quarterback and needs time in the pocket. Johnson, he reminds me even a little of Tyler Van Dyke, where it's like, if he has time back there, if you give him time, he's gonna hurt you. He has got an absolute cannon, and he's not afraid to throw the ball down the field. But Alabama's secondary is the counterpunch. I really think this is a great game to watch between two teams who counter each other's quarterbacks very, very well. And obviously there's other factors that go into winning games, but for these two teams, especially Alabama, figuring out how to get Milroe going is big. And Johnson, you know, now this will be his third game. He didn't start against Auburn, but he came in, I think, prior to or right after halftime. He's looked really, really, really good, but he hasn't seen a coverage unit like this.
Yeah. No, he hasn't, man. That's a great point that you made, because, yeah, A&M does blitz at a high rate in the past couple of weeks, and that's kind of the formula for Alabama. Like you mentioned, they are doing better against it, but that's kind of the formula you want to be running it with the Crimson Tide. So that's going to be a great matchup. And then on the other side, you mentioned it. I mean, I thought when Wegman went down, I was like, okay, you know, I was really high in A&M because of Wegman, who I think can still be one of the top quarterbacks in next year's draft. Max Johnson, right now, like you said, 92.2 passing grade. That's fourth among all quarterbacks in the country right now, man. And he has a great receiving core to throw to as well. 79.3 receiving grade. You got Evan Stewart, who I mentioned, Luther Burden's probably the number one receiver in next year's draft. Evan Stewart's probably number two, man. He's a stud receiver A&M's got. Anaya Smith has played really well as well. The other thing that I think Alabama could take advantage of, though, is you see right there, Texas A&M is 103rd in pass blocking grade. They have not done a very good job of protecting Wegman and Max Johnson. Dallas Turner has really put all those tools together so far this season. Before, he was kind of a high ceiling guy who hasn't really put it together, in my opinion. This year he has, and this year he's showing why he should be a first round pick in this upcoming NFL draft. Right now, Dallas Turner is fourth among all edge defenders in the country with 24 pressures on the season. Dallas Turner could have a big game against Texas A&M. I think that's going to be a big mismatch for the Aggies, is Dallas Turner and, the other defensive linemen that Alabama has as well, getting pressure on Max Johnson. But like you mentioned as well, Alabama, man, great coverage unit. I'm number one in coverage grade, only allow about 4.6 yards per passing play as well. And then the two corners they got, Kool-Aid McKinstry, who I thought was the number one corner in the country entering the season, and Terrion Arnold, the other cornerback they have there, they're two of the Power Five's 10 highest graded cornerbacks so far this season. They're the only duo to be in the top 10 of the Power Five. So they have two stud corners. And like I mentioned, Texas A&M has two stud receivers in Evan Stewart and Nia Smith. So that matchup that you'll see with those two is going to be a lot of fun. So it should be, again, they match up really well, both teams with each other. So it should be a really, really interesting game. Dalton, the last two Alabama and A&M games have really come down to basically the last play of the game. Of course, A&M beat him on the field goal, game-winning field goal with no time left a couple years ago. Last year, when Jalen Milroe was starting because Bryce Young was hurt, it came down to a goal line stop for Alabama to win the game. Who do you think comes out on top this year, and do you think it will be another classic game that we get?
I do. I think it's going to go down to the wire. As far as predicting any crazy endings or anything like that, you know, these two teams are. It's been going back at least a decade. But and it's always tough to win at A&M, no matter how good or bad they are, right? I think the Crimson Tide are going to pull it out. I think they're starting to find a rhythm. I think their defense is really played to Saban's identity, you know, his background in the secondary and everything like that. Dallas Turner, I think you make a really good point on him, because I think it's widely assumed he's going to be a first-round pick. This is the type of game that could make you a top-10 pick.
Yeah.
Okay, you go into A&M as your team's best pass rusher against a quarterback who you really need to get pressure on in big moments, and you perform. You know, he puts up something like 2 or 3 sacks in this game. You're going to talk about him being in the top 10 or 12 in the draft. So it's a big game. It's a big game all the way around, right? The SEC West is still kind of open. Almost everybody's got a loss now. A&M is undefeated. You know, Bama's undefeated in the SEC West, at least. This is a huge game. I mean, you can see this is kind of a driver's seat game with LSU losing to Ole Miss. So I think Alabama's defense is going to be the difference in this game, right? Auburn can play, Arkansas can play, but Max Johnson hasn't seen this. And it's just Bama, they're finding their identity. I think so. Now, could they find some struggles against the blitz and Milroe having to improvise a lot and all that? Sure. But I just think they're finding it. I think they are starting to get in a groove. And if they get in a groove, like if they win this game, look out.
Yeah.
Because LSU doesn't have a ton of answers, especially on defense. They've already beaten Ole Miss. You know, if you get this Alabama team in a groove and they beat LSU and they get all the way to the SEC title game and it's like, oh, wait, Alabama's back to being Alabama. I thought they lost to Texas and the thing, USF and all that. This is a big breaking point, I think, here for Alabama. If they can break through this game at A&M, I'm going to take them 27-24. It's going to be tight. A&M's got talent. A&M can really throw the ball. You know, this is just as big a test for Alabama's secondary as Texas was. A&M can really get down the field, and they can really. I'm you know, for A&M's sake, I'm hoping they come in with the same. If they come in with the same game plan they did against Arkansas, which is the exact opposite of what Ole Miss did against Bama, by not blitzing them at all.
Yeah.
If they come in. And they stay aggressive like they did against Arkansas, they're going to give themselves a fighting chance. Because Milroe, he's not giving the ball away against the blitz the last couple weeks, but he is taking off running. So, and there are things in certain defenses when you can design pressures for mobile quarterbacks to force them to roll a certain way and get him on the back end of it. I think that's where A&M is going to go with this. I that's what I would do. Because Milroe wants to hold the ball as long as he can. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas Johnson, the opposite, wants to get rid of the football, right? You've got two opposite quarterbacks, and you've got two defenses that counter those two guys across from each other. So it's a weird dynamic in this game, and I wonder if maybe all that being said, that Jace McClellan might just be the difference, the running game for Alabama, because you look at the rest of A&M's team performance-wise, quarterbacks have been great, and everything else has been closer to solid. But I'll take Alabama 27-24, and that defense, their secondary being the difference, because right now it looks like the best secondary in the country.
It absolutely does, man. It absolutely does. Like I mentioned, that cornerback duo they have is legit, but it's a great matchup. This is a great, great matchup where you got kind of strength on strength almost across the board in this game. So I'm excited to watch this game. I think it's going to be another great game. I agree with you, though. I think Alabama will come out on top. I have them winning 27-21, so almost the exact same score that you had. But yeah, man, I think Alabama, they continue its rebound from the loss to Texas about a month ago, and they're kind of the quiet, you know, giant in college football. Now, the sleeping giant in college football, where it's like, man, if they keep winning and they keep this rolling, they already beat Ole Miss, and they beat A&M. Like I said, LSU is on the downswing right now. They keep it rolling, man. All of a sudden, they go into that SEC championship game with one loss, and they could be facing a Georgia team. That could be a pseudo playoff game in itself, where it's like the winner of that game moves on to the college football playoff. So I think after the Texas game, we even were guilty of this as well, where we were saying it's over. Like after the USF game especially, we're like, I don't know how they fix this. But they fixed it, and they're looking pretty good right now. So I think Alabama's going to win this game and continue its rebound, man. And the Nick Saban revenge tour is going to continue through College Station, man. So it should be a lot of fun. The last SEC game that we're talking about in this is number 20, Kentucky, at number one, Georgia, which is at 7 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. And the big storyline, honestly, Dalton, is whether or not Georgia is the number one team in the country.
Yeah, we've already had a debate about this. There's debates about it going on everywhere that you know, they don't – the eye test tells you they don't look like it, mm-hmm. but they're still fundamentally sound. They play good defense, and they're piecing it together on offense. That's, I think, the most concerning part is Carson Beck has been decent. He's been doing what the coaches tell him. Only three big-time throws so far. Their offense is basically – get first downs until we can pop something off with Brock Bowers, which when you have the best tight end and maybe the best non-quarterback in the country is a decent plan a lot of weeks. You know, I think Georgia's definitely benefited from not having to play any elite teams so far. This is the best team they're going to play. But they don't look like the best team in the country, but they're getting it done. They're still getting the wins. So there's a dynamic, is a funky dynamic here where if you were to look at 2023 alone, take out the two trophies and the reputation, where you wouldn't put them at number one. Yeah, I had them at number four earlier in the week. I've seen a few other top tens where they're not number one, and I think it's totally reasonable based on the lack of resume, and with the lack of resume not blowing some of these teams out. A struggle for around a half with UAB, struggle for a little more than a half with South Carolina, almost losing to Auburn. If Auburn had a quarterback, Georgia might have lost that game. But you play the teams in front of you. They're not stomping them. They're figuring out things offensively. They don't have as much elite talent across the board as they have the last 2 weeks. You have Bowers. You know, I talked about Malachi Starks the other day at safety, highest graded safety in the country. Other than that, there's not a ton of elite talent. There's good talent, McConkey, the front seven. You know, I have issues with the pass rush. I have some concerns about inconsistency on their offense, but if they were to go out then and turn around and really beat up on a team like Kentucky at home, then you start having different conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned, Matt, I currently still have them at number one. You have them at number four. I've seen people have them at number seven or eight. Like it really is wide open right now. So wherever you have Georgia, I think is fair, honestly, because as the reigning back-to-back champs, they deserve the right to enter the season as number one. But like you mentioned, they have not shown through five games that they are the best team in the country. They struggled with South Carolina. They struggled with Auburn. They trailed in the second half of both of those games. And South Carolina and Auburn are two teams that are outside the top 45 of PFF's power rankings that you can find at pff.com. Now you face a Kentucky team that, yes, is number 20 in the country. So this is the first ranked game for Georgia so far this season. But in PFF's power rankings, Kentucky is number 14 in the country in our power rankings. So this is a quality, quality Kentucky team that you're playing. And, yeah, this is a big prove-it time for Georgia, because if they struggle to another victory, it won't be as bad as say, the Auburn or the South Carolina ones. But if they lose this game, I mean, all of a sudden it's panic mode for Georgia. You're saying, oh my God, like, is this really the defending back-to-back champs? So it's going to be a big test for them this week, man, against Kentucky in this SEC East showdown. And really, these are, in my opinion, the two best teams in the SEC East too. I know Tennessee is still ranked right now, but I don't entirely trust Joe Milton in them as much as I do Georgia and Kentucky right now. But what is the matchup, Dalton, that you're ultimately watching in this game?
Well, real quick, I think we just talked about it. Watch out for Missouri in that SEC.
That's true. East. Yes, that's very true. Correct.
I'm going to be honest. From what I've seen, they probably have the best offense of the group.
Good but call.
Anyway, I'm expecting. I'll be honest with you. This is a weird one. This is going to be. It was a rock fight last year. Georgia won 16-6. I'm expecting another rock fight. And my problem is digging in on last year's game and digging in on this year's Kentucky tape, and I actually had the opportunity to grade them against Eastern Kentucky, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but through about two and a half quarters, I was not impressed with their offense at all. It took them a long time, even against a team like an Eastern Kentucky, to pick it up. Now, last week, Ray Davis just mowed the Gators down.
Yeah.
Okay. He's going to need to be superhuman in this game.
Yep.
All right. They didn't block the Gators all that well. It was really more a factor of Davis just being Superman. It broke, I think, 11 tackles on the day, which is nuts. And the Gators took a lot of terrible angles when fitting their run game. It was just bad angles and missed tackles. The Gators coaches are probably going to look at that film and they're gonna need a shot or two. But this, my problem with Kentucky, and it's very much they went into the game last year like this. I know how they can stay in the game. Play defense. They sat back and very soft. Look, Brock Bowers last year, he only had 2 catches for 10 yards on him. You know, they play deep zones. They sat back, often bringing only 3-man rushes, cover 4, like sit back and keep ourselves in this game, right? I know that they know how to keep themselves in the game. I don't know what their plan is to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
Devin Leary, I just don't know. It's not enough. You're not going to beat Georgia like last week throwing the ball. They threw the ball for like 80 or 85 yards on Florida. You're not beating Georgia like that.
No.
You're just not. You very rarely beat Georgia running the ball. If you look at, you know, so Auburn got off running the ball a little bit. But if you look at how you run the ball on Georgia, it's quarterbacks. In 4 of their 5 games, the opposing team's leading rusher was the quarterback. They have yet to allow a running back to rush for 60 yards on them this year. So that's really the read option dynamic, the design quarterback run dynamic is non-existent in Kentucky's offense. If I remember seeing right, I don't think they have positive yardage rushing from the quarterbacks. Devin Leary doesn't run the ball.
No.
They throw quick passes, they get the ball out, and otherwise they just turn around and hand it to Davis. That just old school traditional style of football doesn't work against Kirby Smart. I mean, you go back even to his Alabama days. Wasn't there some like years long streak where they didn't give up a 100-yard rusher?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, there was something crazy. They went, I don't remember. It was like multiple years where like, oh, it's been this many games since Alabama gave up a 100-yard rusher. And Georgia, if you take the quarterbacks out of it, they look like the same thing. If Kentucky thinks offensively they're just going to line up and run the ball the same way they did last week, it's not happening. And the problem is that's their offense.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally Devin Leary gets some quick passes off. You know, they move the chains, they throw the basic stuff. But there isn't anything else dynamic other than Davis in this offense. Now, their defense can keep them in it. This is going to be a physical. Last year's game was a fist fight. It was 16-6, but Kentucky just couldn't, like, make any game-changing plays that tilted it in their favor, and that was at Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
The more I watched, on the surface, this looks like a game, and it probably will still offensively give Georgia issues because Georgia really has their own issues on offense anyway. But I'm struggling to find, other than Ray Davis having a Heisman day, which, you know, Georgia's a different animal than Florida. Florida just... Their pursuit to the ball and their fits in the run game were a mess. I don't know where, especially their linebackers, I don't know where they were going. Kirby Smart's linebackers don't do that.
Yeah.
So, this game, I want to believe in Kentucky, but it just looks so similar to last year where it's just, you're going to get this rock fight and it's going to be physical and it's going to drag and it's going to drag and it's going to be, you know, everybody complains nowadays in boxing that all the heavyweight fights go 12 rounds and nobody ever gets knocked out. That's what Kentucky does.
Yeah.
And I know how they can drag this out. I know how they cannot embarrass themselves, but I'm struggling to find where they can win. Because if Georgia's only going to give up, let's say it's more than 60. Let's say Ray Davis gets some normal number, 80 or 90 yards in this game, which he's done a couple times this year. He had a huge day last week, but prior to that, I think he only had one other 100-yard rushing day. So for as much as I am a little bit down on Georgia for being inconsistent, especially on offense, I have a hard time believing Kentucky's going to go into Athens with a very similar offense. Because, you know, last year they had Chris Rodriguez and all that, and Will Levis and all. It was a similar offense, and they shut down Rodriguez for 50-something yards, 55 yards, somewhere in there. And he's in the NFL now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to find the breakthrough for Kentucky. And at least on the tape, and I know they've, you know, what they did against Florida last week, I can't find it because Georgia's on that different level from Kentucky and Florida and the rest of that division. So unless Missouri's offense is that wild, but we're going to take them out until later. I'm struggling to find it for Kentucky. They scored 6 points last year with Will Levis as their quarterback. And And Devin Leary's not even, he's not Will Levis.
No, he's not. He really isn't. And Will Levis, like you said, like George, if to beat Georgia in the run game, at least, so you have to have a quarterback that can run the ball. Will Levis would have been the perfect quarterback for them to have in this year's game, honestly. But yeah, it really is, man. The matchup really is whether or not Ray Davis can once again be, like you said, Superman. Because that's their offense. He is their offense. He had 280 yards, 3 touchdowns against Florida. And I think he made a great point. A lot of that, Florida was taking horrible angles, and the linebackers were not getting into the gaps like they were supposed to. You never see that in a Kirby Smart defense. In fact, if any of his linebackers take the wrong angles or go in the wrong gaps, they'll probably get their scholarships taken away, man. So the Kirby Smart, he is, if there's one thing he does, man, it is he coaches that front seven harder than anyone else probably in college football. So you won't see them take wrong angles. So then it comes down to whether or not Ray Davis can just bounce off Georgia defenders, which we haven't really seen any running back be able to do in a very, very long time. So, on the season, though, Ray Davis is playing really well. He's right now second among all running backs in the country with 5.9 yards after contact per attempt. Now, I will say Georgia's run defense, because they don't really have the dudes that they had the last 2 years, Georgia right now is 40th in the Power 5 in EPA per rush. So it hasn't really been as dominant of a run defense as you've seen from the Bulldogs in the last 2 years, but it's still a very, very well-coached team, and I don't think Ray Davis is going to be able to rush for 300 like he did against Florida. But ultimately, I think Georgia should just stack the box, man, and make Devin Leary beat you, because he hasn't really had to yet. All he's been doing is relying on that run game, and I think you can't let Ray Davis beat you. You got to make Devin Leary beat you. But ultimately, will Ray Davis have his Heisman game, Dalton, and will Kentucky pull off the upset, or will Georgia silence some of his doubters with a win over the Wildcats?
I think Georgia's going to silence us for a little bit. Now, if they go and win this game 16-6 like they did last year, maybe not. I'm going to take them. It's in Athens. I'm going to take them a little better than that. I'm going to take them 23-6. Okay. I think they'll find enough. I think there's ways that Kentucky can stay in this game for a while. But, like you said, the overall on Georgia's run D doesn't look as good as past years, but you look at a lot of their negative plays, and it's with the quarterback running the ball. Mm-hmm. And that's just something Kentucky doesn't have. They don't have Peyton Thorne's not going to take off running. Robbie Ashford, these guys Auburn had, Spencer Rattler scrambled for a lot of yards in that game. Devin Leary just doesn't move like that. The Kentucky just doesn't have that dimension in their offense. So it's going to be, if Kentucky wins this game, it's going to be something. I think it's going to be something wild, like 10-6 or something where Georgia's offense just completely shuts down, or you get turnovers. But Carson Beck, the one thing for him on a positive side is he hasn't really turned the ball over at all. He's only got 3 big time throws, but I believe he's only got 2 turnover worthy plays. He doesn't give the ball away either. He gets rid of the football, as we talked about Monday, and he just puts it in a decent enough spot to get a first down. So I'll take Georgia 23-6. I think they're going to silence the doubters for a bit. People are going to, okay, you beat Kentucky. They were number 20. That's a little better than the last 2 weeks. And I think it would be a good week for them to assert themselves. Now, if their offense comes out against a good Kentucky defense and looks really good, let's say this game gets, let's say they win this game by 30 or there's something like that happens, we might start talking Georgia back into the top. Maybe the top spot, maybe the top 2 or 3. For me, I had them at 4 just because the eye test and all that. It's an interesting game for Georgia to see how well this goes, but I do think they're going to win. This Kentucky team, Ray Davis did what he did last week, but there's not a ton of balance, and I think Georgia it's a whole different animal than Florida's defense. You're not going to bounce off 11 tackles. Yeah. You're not going to just get these horrible run fits. That doesn't happen for Kirby Smart. I'll take the Bulldogs in a reasonably convincing, 23-6 win.
Yeah, that's fair. I got Georgia as well. I got Georgia 31-20 in this game. I think Kentucky's offense is a little bit more But I do think Georgia, man, gets his first ranked win of the season and quiets some of the doubters. Not all of them, but some of the doubters. I don't see Kentucky matching up with Georgia very well. Because like I said, that run game, I just don't think it'll be able to be as dominant as it is against Georgia. But last game that we're talking about is 7:30 p.m. on ABC. That is number 10 Notre Dame at number 25 Louisville. And for me, Dalton, the storyline is, can Notre Dame keep this energy up, man? Their schedule, I don't know who was making their schedule. It is brutal, man. They played in week zero and they haven't had a bye week yet. So they're one of two Power Five teams right now that has already played six games. They've already played half their season already, the other one being Vanderbilt. Not only has Notre Dame played six straight games without a bye week, they also have played two physically and emotionally draining games against Ohio State and against Duke. Both those games came down to the wire. Now you got a third top 25 team in as many weeks in Louisville, and you're on the road against Louisville, and this could be one of the biggest games Louisville's had in a long time, man. Louisville right now, first 5-0 start in a decade since Teddy Bridgewater was their quarterback. This is the first time Louisville is 5-0. Jeff Brohm, the new head coach there, man, he's looking for a statement victory. So Notre Dame, man, they got – this is a brutal, brutal schedule. And they're not even off next week either. They got USC next week. So they got four top 25 teams in a row playing their seventh game of the season next week, when next week a lot of – or eighth game of the season, excuse me, next week, when a lot of teams are playing their sixth games next week. So they're basically two games ahead of almost everyone else in the country right now. So, yeah, man, my biggest storyline for me is just can Notre Dame – keep the energy up week after week against quality opponent after quality opponent, man.
Well, part of being at Notre Dame is being in the spotlight, right? Yeah. They have their own TV deal all to themselves, and they get ranked higher sometimes than they should. And look, this Louisville game at the beginning of the year was not supposed to be a ranked on ranked game. Louisville last year wasn't very good at all. And this year they've kind of, 5-0, they've kind of bounced back, and they've earned their 5-0. But Notre Dame, they still have, number 10 still sounds right to me, right? And even despite, look, Duke's a really good team. Ohio State's obviously really good. They should have won that game. The thing I think carrying Notre Dame right now, is now that they've lost already a big game, Notre Dame, without being in a conference and a conference title and all that, and you mentioned it with LSU before, teams with two losses don't get in the playoff.
Yeah.
The urgency factor for Notre Dame is we have to win.
Yeah.
We blew our margin for error early, and Marcus Freeman at the forefront of that with everything that happened at the end against Ohio State. But you sit there and look at a schedule like this and a win potentially against a ranked Louisville team on the road, and you go, there's plenty to build here. There's plenty to put on this resume between Louisville and USC, and I believe they play North Carolina later in the year.
I believe so. I know they play Clemson, so they got
There's an at Clemson in there. You're right.
Carolina though. So
okay, not North Carolina. Still brutal at Clemson.
Yeah,
USC next week. And even the easiest game of the bunch against Navy, that first game you mentioned, that was in Ireland. Mm-hmm. So they've got a trip to Ireland. They've got the Ohio State heartbreak. They've got last week with Duke already on the table. Now you got another ranked road game. I mean, it's to be in the spotlight sometimes is a curse, man.
Dude, now that you mentioned, that's a great point. NFL teams, whenever they make a team play in London or Germany or wherever, they always have a bye week the next week because you have to recover from that massive time zone. Like we said, Notre Dame has already played six games back-to-back-to-back-to-back, even though they went to Ireland, and now they got Ohio State, Duke, Louisville, USC. The schedule makers, man, were not kind to the Fighting Irish this year. That's a great point you made, man, because I totally forgot about that. It's like, yeah, they went to Ireland and still had to play a game the next week. So it's insane what the Fighting Irish have had to go through so far this season, man.
Yeah, big time. Getting to this game, though, obviously we're going to have the USC game. Pretty good chance we'll have the at Clemson game as long as Clemson keeps themselves together. This game, it's another one like last week. I think to a lesser, although Duke played their defense, especially played incredibly well last week. It's another game I do think with the urgency high, even though it's on the road and everything, I do think Notre Dame is pretty clearly the better team here.
Yeah.
Louisville's 5-0, and they've earned it. There's nothing to take away from that. But you look at kind of what they've done. They beat Georgia Tech by five. They beat Indiana by 7. They beat NC State last week 13-10 with only 20 yards rushing on their side. They're winning, but, you know, anytime you put the tape on, right, we've done it for just about every team today, you look for something exceptional, okay? What makes this thing go, right, when you look at any team? And we look Notre Dame the same way. We've rolled through it the last for 3 weeks in a row now. Defense, defensive line, front seven, they cover well. Estime is a monster, I think still second in the country in rushing grade. Physical, Joe Alt is going top 10 in the draft. Hartman keeps it together, although in big, big games, it's still kind of to be decided. It's not great, but he got him through last week, the big run on 4th and 16, all that. But I look at Louisville, I can't find anything they do exceptional. They're winning games, but there's nothing that jumps out at you. Like Jack Plummer sometimes makes really good throws. He's kind of a gunslinger. Under pressure, it's a mess. He's at 88.2 passing grade when clean and just over 35 when pressured. Like off platform, Jack Plummer doesn't throw the best balls. He's really got to be kept clean. My first concern, if I'm Louisville, is how do we block these two guys in the middle?
Yeah.
Between Howard Cross and Riley Mills. They're two of the 10 best pass rushing D tackles in the country. That's the first thing, because the first thing for Louisville is keeping Jack Plummer protected so he can step into these throws, because he gets a little bit shaky when the heat is on. You know, he's throwing off his back foot, throwing off platform, and he doesn't have the arm talent to make throws like that. When we talk about Williams and Sanders and Penix and some of these guys who have freak arm talent who can do those things, Jack Plummer's not one of those guys. Now, he's a gunslinger. He can throw the ball down the field, for sure. He's got 11 big-time throws on the year. He's also got 6 interceptions. So he takes his chances. Last week, NC State, like I said, Louisville only ran for 20 yards. When you can't run the ball like on an NC State or some of these other teams, I'm not sure how I can expect you to run the ball against Notre Dame, right? You know, Duke last week, Riley Leonard took off running. Jack Plummer's not Riley Leonard.
Yeah.
So I'm digging through the tape and I'm going, this is a solid team. This is a team, yeah, that's better, a little bit better than Georgia Tech and NC State, and they're probably something like an 8-win team, you know. But the problem, you know, if I think you're an 8-win team and you're already 5-0, there's always a team or two. Kansas, this happened to last year. They get the reality check. And I have a feeling Louisville's the team this week. That Notre Dame, my only answers really for Louisville winning this game, Jack Plummer's got to be safer with the football. Being the gunslinger is cool. It's part of what makes him productive. But this is not a game where you can mess around throwing the ball into a ton of tight windows, right? Kyle McCord got away with 1 or 2 against them, but generally Kyle McCord played really safe football. Plummer's gonna take the game of his life, man. I'm telling you, they have to run the ball. If they only run for 20 yards on Notre Dame, it's over. Yeah. And I think one bit of hope is their pass rush. It's not a deep pass rush, but when you look at their two edge guys, Ashton Gelati leads the nation in pressures right now, and Stephen Heron is in the top 15 in pressures. It's not a deep pass rush. But those two guys out there, we've talked about Hartman under pressure too. You get to Hartman, you've got a similar dynamic as Plummer, where he doesn't have the most arm talent on the planet. He's not going to make off-platform throws. That's really Louisville's one hope, I think, is they got to drag this game out a little bit. They can't have turnovers, and the problem with the pass rush and only having two guys really that rush the passer like that, you've got Alton Fisher on the other side.
Yeah.
So it's not fun at all trying to rush the passer against Notre Dame. Very few teams, you know, Ohio State did it, but they're Ohio State. They're loaded. Louisville's not loaded like that. I think Duke was more physical than I thought they would be. I'm not sure Louisville's that physical.
Yeah, I think that's the problem too. I think Joel's been fantastic. Blake Fisher's been a little up and down so far this season. So maybe that could be an area of weakness for Notre Dame, that, you know, you get pressure off the right side from Blake Fisher. But Yeah, man, my thing that I'm looking for is really which running back is going to have more success, because both offenses are really kind of built around the running backs. Audric Estime has been fantastic this year for Notre Dame. You see right there, leads the country in rushing yards, leads the country in rushing yards after contact, leads Power 5 running backs in overall grade this season. He has been fantastic. If you're asking me to give out the Doak Walker Award, it probably is going to Audric Estime right now. He has been phenomenal so far this season. Jawar Jordan, on the other side for Louisville, 7th in the Power 5 in rushing yards, 4th in the Power 5 in yards per carry, nearly 8 yards per carry. Great receiving back, too, has the 3rd most receiving yards in the Power 5. Both of them are dominant running backs, and both of them bring something different to the table. Audric Estime is a 227-pound back. He is a bruiser, man. He is like kind of like a, you know, Jerome Bettis went to Notre Dame all the way back in the day in the 90s. Not comparing him to the bus, but he's kind of like that, where it's just like you hand him the ball, A gap, B gap. He is bouncing off tacklers. He's going to grind out yards the hard way, and he's made a living doing that. Jawar Jordan, on the other side, is 185 pounds. He is 40 pounds lighter than Audric Estime, and he wins by getting out in space, quickness, agility, explosiveness. So two really dominant running backs, and I think Jordan might be able to have a little bit more success even with the two great defensive tackles that Notre Dame has, because they're going to get him out on the edge more rather than, you know, if it was an Audric Estime type back going up against those two D tackles, I'd say, okay, that's probably not going to work too well for you. But Jordan, I think, is going to be able to get out in space. But both teams as well have done a really good job of stopping the run. Notre Dame right now, 5th in the Power 5 with a 90.3 run defense grade. Louisville tied for 8th in the Power 5, averaging about 3.3 yards per run attempt so far this season. So both defenses have done a really good job of stopping the run, and I think ultimately this game could basically come down to which running back has the bigger day, because both offenses really rely on Estime and Jawar Jordan. They're the two best players, besides Joe Alt, they're the two best players probably on each of these teams, is Jawar Jordan and Audric Estime. So they're the two weapons that they rely on the most, and I think they're gonna really try to carry both their teams to victory in this one. But ultimately, Dalton, who do you have coming out on top in this Saturday night game in Louisville?
I think Estime and the Irish have the advantage in that matchup. I think the level of physicality, I don't think Louisville's ready for this level of physicality. Yeah. I know we hinted at it with Duke last week, and they were ready. Duke's got real size and real toughness to their team, you know, starting with the quarterback and working all the way around. Louisville, they get beat up inside sometimes. They're smaller than Duke, and I think they're going to have a lot of problems. I wouldn't be shocked if Estime ground his way for like 200 yards in this game. Right. It's Louisville. They're small. You know, sometimes that can work to your advantage, but Notre Dame, you know, you look at, they've seen some things already, right? You've seen Marvin Harrison and Ibuka. Then they've seen like the toughness of Duke. Right, it's Louisville has some speed, but they don't have the speed like USC next week that's going to threaten Notre Dame like that. I don't think they'll get some points. They're at home. Their offense, they'll get vertical if Plummer makes some brave throws and it works. But all across the board, I think there's too much size here for Notre Dame. There's a mismatch here to me with Estime. The running game, you know, Louisville struggled to stop the run, especially against Boston College. There's Boston College again running it up on somebody. You know, I mean, I think Notre Dame's still one of the 10 best teams in the country. I think number 10's about right. New Year's Six, all that stuff. We'll get into the USC game next week. But it just comes down to me where I go, Louisville's a solid football team that's beat on some softer football teams, right? Indiana's not good, and they only beat them by 7. Georgia Tech's not great, 1 by 5. NC State last week with Louisville, that's probably pretty comparable. And Notre Dame beat NC State by 21. So if I'm just going kind of the transitive thing there, there's that. But I think it's a level of football Louisville's not ready to play yet. I'm going to take Notre Dame 42-24. Maybe that's a little widespread on the road, I could be wrong, but and maybe they won't even hit. Maybe not 42. Let me fix that. Let me go like 35-24 because this game is going to be more about Notre Dame just being the more physical team. I if I was throwing a bold prediction out there, let me take estimate for 200 yards and Notre Dame for the win, and then we'll talk the big one next week with Notre Dame and see if they can. That's a level of speed that's challenging what they got going on out there. But Louisville, look, they're a solid team. I don't think they're on this level. I think they're the team this week that you know, and there's certain ones. Look, I mean, look, Missouri's in that low 20s. Kentucky's number 20. It's kind of a thing. It's like, who wants to prove themselves? I think Louisville gets the reality check.
Yeah, I agree, man. I got Notre Dame. I got in a little bit closer. I have 31-24. But like you said, man, Notre Dame, the way they win games is basically by trying to make you scream uncle, basically. So they're going to out-physical you as much as they can, man. And I think the Fighting Irish, this is kind of a mismatch. I don't think Louisville, like you said, can match them physically. So it's going to be a tough game. And, I mean, Notre Dame next week, I mean, that USC run defense, how vulnerable it is. I mean, they're going to – Aldrick Esmond might have another huge day against USC, man. So it's going to be – that again, I can't wait to preview that game, man. But this is what we got for our Week 6 preview, man. Four ranked games, another one with Alabama and A&M. I want to shout out a couple other games, too, that we didn't get to. Ohio State playing Maryland, who I have as a top 20 team in the country. That should be a lot of fun. And then also Washington State playing UCLA. Unfortunately, it's on the Pac-12 network, so nobody's going to be able to watch it. But speaking of Washington State, we actually just dropped an interview with Washington State quarterback Cameron Ward that you could check out as well. So go check out our interview with Cameron Ward. But that's what we got, man. It's going to be an awesome Week 6 of college football.
Totally. And I'll tell you, you mentioned that Washington State UCLA game. I was almost begging you to get it on this show, but we were sticking to five this week. That's a fun one to me. That between with Cam Ward and all the weapons against USC's pass rush, Leatu Latu and that whole gang. That I'll tell you, if you're one of the 12 people that does have the Pac-12 network, go ahead and watch that. That's going to be the low-key primetime game of the week. Washington State, you know, I mentioned Ben Arbuckle earlier when we were talking about, you know, offensive coordinators. Hey, he's an elite play caller.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, he has got – those are two – them and Missouri are my two offenses I'm watching. They're just really fun to watch. Schematically, they've unlocked this talent. Cam Ward now in the last couple weeks, one of the best QBs in the country in a loaded Pac-12. I mean, it's just a million quarterbacks in the Pac-12. But that Washington State UCLA game is going to be one to keep track of, and it would be a big win for Washington State. Are they up to number 13? It is now. In the country.
Yeah, 13.
Look, UCLA is still a good team. I know what happened at Utah happened, but that's a really good team. If Washington State wins that game, and I think it's at UCLA, I want to say, that's a massive, massive win. And to be honest with you, we start talking about them like, you know what? They could keep up with those big three because their offense. I'm telling you, tune in to Cam Ward and everything they got going on over there, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, absolutely. Tune into our interview with Cam Ward too. As good as he is on the field, man, he is awesome on the mic too. I actually asked him. I was like, man, what's you know, what makes you different from other quarterbacks in the country? And he's like, my motivation is that I have hatred for all the coaches that told me they were going to offer me coming out of high school and didn't offer me coming out of high school. So he has some hate in his heart, man. I got fired up through the interview. He was a great kid as well, man. Awesome story, dude. He only had two FCS offers coming out of high school, zero-star recruit. Nobody rated him coming out of high school. And he went to Incarnate Word for a couple years. Now he's at Washington State, and now he's probably going to be an NFL draft pick this year. And he's right now one of the top 15 Heisman candidates, according to every sports book right now. So he's an awesome kid. Check out the interview with him. He's got a big, big game in the Rose Bowl this week, man, against UCLA. That's going to be a great game. Maryland, Ohio State is going to be a great game, too. My Terrapins, I'm really high on them. Hopefully they make that a game. But, yeah, man, it should be an awesome Week 6 of college football. So we appreciate you guys watching. We have another video coming out after the games are over next week. Don't know quite what we'll be doing yet. We did a top 10 teams this week. We'll hopefully be doing something along those lines next week as well. But that's what we got, man. For Dalton Wasserman, for producer Eli back there, the GOAT, I'm Max Chadwick, and we'll see you guys next time.